You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. Didn't know if we were going to be chatting today or not. First of all, I appreciate many of you reaching out, sending tweets, concerned about my son. His surgery went very, very well. Very excited about that. It's going to be a rough recovery, but we have a snow day here in Pittsburgh, so my daughter and I slept in, much needed, the last couple days, did not get a lot of sleep at all. And so I figured I'd have a little chat here with my buddy Mark Schofield, get that to you guys, and then I'm going to head down to the hospital for the rest of the day. So it all worked out very well. I'm not sure what my Sando situation is for tomorrow, but I'm planning on doing probably similar situation as today. Mark, man, what's up? How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, buddy. Similar situation, snow day down here.
Yeah.
Hope that your son is doing well. Hope you get to spend some time with him today at the hospital. Glad to hear that the surgery went well and excited to talk about what I think we got a ton of things on our plate today to get into.
We do. I hope to get to all of them. But first little nugget, DeMarcus Lawrence said he's not going to sign the franchise tag. And that's all I've heard about it. I mean, are we expecting a Le'Veon Bell potential situation, a sign and trade, hey, give me a long-term deal, or we're not, or I'm not playing for you type of situation? I think he's the consensus number one free agent on the market, and 25 sacks in the last 2 years, perfect health during that time. I think he's earned it.
Yeah, I think this is more of a negotiating, let's come to terms on a big type deal, because you don't want me walking to another team. I mean, there are a lot of teams right now that have a ton of cap space out there. And so I'm sure teams will be lining up to throw money his way. But this is an interesting sort of edge defender free agency class. You've got, guys like Lawrence, and, there are guys like Brandon Graham. There's Trey Flowers out there.
Dave
and
Ford.
So, D. Ford, although it seems like the, Cloudy's there. It seems like the Chiefs are going to bring Ford back. But, there's some interesting names out there, but not DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, I think you're right, Matt. This is the best edge guy that's going to be out there, the best pass rusher that's going to be out there. You can never have enough pass rush in today's NFL. And so I think this is more of a, let's give me the big number so I come back and play, for you guys for the next, 7, 8, 10 years or whatever, more than a I'm Le'Veon Bell, I'm walking away kind of situation.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's very, very early. I don't expect a Bell situation at all. I would think the Cowboys give him a 4-year deal and everybody's happy in the end.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, if you're Dallas, when you look at the quarterbacks in that division that you're going to have to play, I mean, yeah, Eli Manning, we don't know how that situation is going to play out, but, you've got Carson Wentz probably coming back, an athletic quarterback that you're going to have to get after. You're going to need a pass rusher. And you've got the best guy on your roster. You pay the man his money.
Yeah. Another smaller nugget that came out this morning was Emmanuel Sanders is not going to restructure his deal. At least that's what he says with Denver. My hunch is he ends up somewhere other than Denver. I wouldn't be shocked if he comes back to Pittsburgh if AB's gone. There's going to be a demand for receivers, and we're going to get to that in a minute, that Sanders might be wise to just say, okay, we're going to part ways in Denver.
Yeah, I think so too. And are we sort of looking at now a tear down and rebuild situation in Denver?
See, I don't know. I'm thinking it might be the opposite, where Elway says, boy, I upgraded a quarterback. I got this system. We're going to win 9 games maybe and save my job.
I don't think it's the right move. I think if you look at the Broncos, we talked about, the Flacco thing last week and wondered if that was really sort of an upgrade situation over Case Keenum. Maybe to a certain extent, but at the numbers, maybe it isn't a full-on upgrade given the cost. Then you've got the situation with the Sanders thing. They need to get some help on the offensive line. Maybe they're still going to draft a quarterback at 10. It just seems like this situation is trending more towards the rebuild. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're going to look around and say, we can get some pieces in. We can win 9 games. But the problem is you're looking at Kansas City and the Chargers in that division too. So 9 games probably leaves you on the outside looking in.
No, I hear you. I have no inside intel or anything. I just think that's Elway's way of looking at this is I'm going to draft a corner and we're going to make a run and our defense is good and Munchak's going to fix the O-line and Flacco's an upgrade and I'm going to save my job and get to 8 or 9 wins. And
And, you know, that could be the case. You know, the interesting thing from Sanders and his point of view is you look at this wide receiver market in terms of the free agents
that's
that are out
going.
There.
Yeah.
And, you know, there aren't a lot of interesting names. I mean, you've got Golden Tate. You know, obviously some of the guys in New England, Patterson, you know, he's looking for a new deal, Dorsett, you know. So there are some interesting names. But a guy like Sanders, you know, he might sort of be the best wide receiver that's going to be available. And so I'm sure he'll have some suitors.
Yeah, assuming he's healthy, you know. I mean, that's we have to throw that out there. But that brings us to the two big names. And as you can imagine, I've talked about Antonio Brown till, you know, the cows will come home. But now we're talking about Odell maybe being on the block. We'll delve into this more. Let's just kind of look at this from a surface situation. But to me, both have headaches. Both are unbelievably good. Odell's worth more to me, though, right?
Yeah, I think so at this point. Because, you know, he's going to be 26 this year. The thing that I don't understand, this idea that you're going to shop Odell at this point, is why wouldn't you have done it last year?
Right.
You know,
before the huge signing bonus.
Before the huge signing bonus, because now you're talking, you know, base salary of 16.75 this year, 14.5. It tapers off a bit as it gets to 29.30. But still, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And let's look at it from, you know, let's try to get into Dave Gettleman's head for a second, which might be a scary place. But you're talking about if you're looking at this quarterback crop and saying, we're going to make one last run with Eli. Why are you going to take one of your two best offensive weapons that you've put around Eli to make him successful and then ship him out of town? Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that you need to address some other things. Maybe you want some help with the O-line. You need some help on the defensive side of the ball. Trade down from six. Somebody's going to want to get up to get in front of Jacksonville to draft a quarterback perhaps. And so you might be able to trade back for the first time in Dave Gettleman's career, I think, and address some other positions of need, you know, later in the first round, early in the second, perhaps, and make that extra run with Eli, with Odell in place. Shopping him right now doesn't seem to make a ton of sense to me.
No, I hear you. And I wonder if they're looking at it from the opposite perspective, kind of like the opposite of what we just talked about with Denver, and saying maybe we have to trade up for Haskins. We move on from Odell. We are rebuilding. But you just drafted a running back in the first round last year, you know? I mean, like,
yeah.
It goes, it's counterintuitive the way direction the offense is going.
Yeah, I just, that idea to me, like, I understand that, look, if they like Haskins and they feel they have to go up and get him, maybe they do that, you know, but you'd still want some help around him. You know, it's not like Haskins is going to come in and immediately be the kind of quarterback then create, you know? If you were going to sort of have that kind of rebuild type thing where you're going to, like, you know, sell off some of the pieces on the offense, I think you go get a quarterback that can actually create on his own, like a Kyler Murray, then a guy like Haskins, you might need some similar help around him because he's more of a guy that is a pocket passer and, you know, does some of those things that you typically associate with NFL quarterbacks, not a guy that's going to create outside of pocket or an off structure like Kyler Murray. So it's a curious thing to be. Will there be teams that even at that cost would like to have an Odell? Sure. You know, but from New York's perspective, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, he kind of blocks, you know, this is kind of like a fantasy point of view, Shepard and Ingram's production. I mean, right. I think you could do worse than Shepard, Ingram, Barkley, and a second-round wide receiver. I mean, that's not the worst set of weapons I've ever heard. But he's a special player. I mean, I don't know.
Timing of it just doesn't make sense, right?
Because right.
You could have done it last year, you know, when it was cheap, and now you're going to take on these cap numbers if you do deal him now. Like, that's rough.
Do you think this is still fair? That if I'm selling Odell, I want the equivalent of two first-round picks, either an early first or both a Green Bay's first or New England's first and their second and next year's second. You know what I mean? Like, I want it all to add up to about two first-round picks. Where Brown, I would say the answer is half of that at best.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment, you know, because when you're looking at Odell, you know, again, 26 right now. Mm-hmm. And so you've sort of got the ability to have him in place for a number of years before you expect that sort of drop off. You know, with Antonio, you know, he's set to turn, he's 30 right now. He's set to turn 31, you know, and he's got the 9 years on him. And they're both incredibly talented receivers. But in terms of the length of the return you're going to get, you know, I think that sort of compensation structure is fair.
And Antonio's doing crazy things now. Which does, too. Oh, that by the too. Way.
Yeah,
not I mean, Odell's the most sound individual, but
no, they both have, you know, their moments, whether on the sidelines or on the gram. But, you know, when you've got Antonio, as you know, describing himself as Mr. Big Chest on Instagram,
yeah, what are you doing?
You know, his agent, you know, they just sort of look, Odell, you know, Antonio, calm yourself down for a bit. You know, you might get the big payday, but stay off the gram for a bit.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I heard Carlos Dunlap say, and he was serious. He wasn't joking or like, you know, poking fun at an opponent, saying Antonio was never the same since what's perfect knocked him out. Maybe true. I mean, he's nuts. Yeah, he's out of his mind.
You know, and we've also heard the things about, you know, since he got the big payday, he hasn't been the same.
Well, yeah.
And you do sort of wonder about that as well.
No doubt. We're going to take a quick break. I got some more stuff around the league I want to talk to Mark about, including his Patriots. We'll be back here in a minute. All right, I mentioned the Patriots. We ended with some Odell and Antonio Brown talk. I don't think there's any way the Steelers send New England Brown. I don't think, I mean, they'd have to overpay like crazy. For those that don't know, the Patriots have the 32nd pick, but a wealth of second and third rounders, too. Do you think they could be in the Odell market?
You know, we're hearing reports that when there were explorations of trading Odell last season, that the Patriots were the most aggressive team and sort of sniffing around and seeing if something could get done. You know, obviously, anytime there's sort of that wide receiver that becomes available might have a little bit of trouble, whether it's off the field or antics or things like that. People in New England immediately think, oh, you know, it's like Randy Moss 2.0. You know, we're going to get him for like a fourth round pick and he's going to go on and put up huge numbers. Obviously, that's a little bit of a stretch, I'd say, to say the least, you know, because we just talked about what Odell is probably going to command in terms of a trade. Would New England go that route? It's something interesting to think about. You know, they've done it a couple of times with obviously the Moss deal. You know, they get Chad Ochocinco as well. But at this kind of cost, it might just be a little bit cost prohibitive for them because, look, they've got other needs to address. Do they need to look at the wide receiver position? Sure. I mean, the Josh Gordon thing, you don't know how that's going to play out. Patterson's a free agent. Hogan's a free agent. Dorsett is a free agent. Chances are one or a couple of those guys are going to walk. You're going to need to replace them. And, look, Braxton Berrios, as much as people might like him, I was in that market. He's not going to replace what you're losing if those guys walk. And so you're going to need to address wide receiver. I think the more Patriots thing to do would be maybe kick the tires on it, but it's going to be too much. And then you look at some of the free agents like a Tyrell Williams and guys like that, maybe an Adam Humphries. Mm-hmm. And then with those sort of second or third round picks, they're going to have some comp picks coming their way as well with Malcolm Butler and Nate Solder that are projected to be third rounders. You could get some of those third round guys in this draft, whether it's like a Deebo Samuel type. Well, obviously, names of people linked to New England, Hunter Renfro, Andy Isabella, you know, maybe they go that route. A Penny Hardaway is another kid I like. You know, Kelvin Harmon, maybe at the start of that second round, because they've got other needs to address. And so they'll probably explore it, but I'd be surprised if it happens.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I tend to agree. Although, you know, a rookie wide receiver doesn't do the Patriots a lot of good.
No.
You know, to try to repeat or, you know.
Yeah, it's – The thing with wide receivers in general is because of the way this offense is structured, because they put so much on the shoulders and in the minds of these wide receivers in terms of route adjustments and, you know, reading the coverage and being on the same page as Tom Brady, it's a steep learning curve. I mean, we see so often receivers come into New England and it takes them a year to be effective, you know, if ever. I mean, Ochocinco was a great example. You know, with Randy Moss, it was pretty easy. Like, look, he was going deep. You know, and it was going to work.
Right.
But for a lot of these other receivers, it takes them a while to learn those route conversions. And look, when you're trying to maximize what's left of Tom Brady, you know, you probably might want to have somebody that's going to come in and play right away. Is Odell going to have that ability? That's something else to consider.
Or
you know, you don't know with that.
Right. Yeah, I hear you. And the thing that people don't talk enough about Moss, but the people in the know say, was he was extremely football intelligent. You know,
extremely.
So, right.
Extremely. And, you know, ask Bill Belichick that.
Right.
You know, he will tell you straight up, like, look, he was one of the smartest guys that ever played for us. And so, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for that because it's easy to overlook that aspect to his game because of how much of a freak he was in terms of his athleticism.
Let's change it to the big people and very big person, Trent Brown. I don't think the Patriots will franchise him. I think he'll get overpaid on the open market. But – and just touch on that for a minute. But more importantly, the one I'm struggling with is, do you think the Bucs tag Donovan Smith? I mean, he's getting better. They want to go downfield. that's a perfect example of overspending on a guy, but you can't really let him walk. That's a tough one for me.
Yeah, that is a tough one for me. I mean, I think that because of the offense that they're going to be running, they're going to want to go downfield. You know, it's better, you know, the devil you have than the devil you don't, right? You
know, right,
than
right.
The devil you don't
know. Left tackle don't grow on trees, right?
Yeah, they don't. And so you've got a guy that he's getting better, like you said. You know, I think they're going to roll with him. They'll probably tag him. As for Brown, look, he came in. He was a question mark. They put him in at left tackle. He had a fantastic season for him. He got that Dante Scarnecchia tutelage. He's going to get a big deal. And this is how the Patriots conduct business. They're going to say, you know what? We're not going to tag you at $15, $16 because that's just not the way we do. They're going to tag, if they tag anybody, Stephen Gostkowski, their kicker, because of the way the numbers work. He's going to go get a big deal. You look at the Jets. You look at the Bills, two teams in the AFC East that need offensive line help. They would love nothing more than to take away Trent Brown. And the Patriots will say, that's fine. We will take a first-round pick in Isaiah Wynn, and we'll just slide him back in when he comes back from his injury. They'll draft like a Dalton Risner in the third round, and they'll move on. Like, that's how they just do
coach
business. And they'll coach him up. They got Dante to rely on. And when you're getting a guy that was drafted in the first round anyway, there are some questions about Isaiah Wynn, whether he can play left tackle. But as Dante Scarnecchia said when they drafted him last year, his arms are short, so are Matt Leitz. And he was a Pro Bowler at left tackle, so I'm not worried about it. Mm-hmm. And if Dante's not worried, Patriots fans shouldn't be worried. So that's how I imagine they'll approach this. Same thing with Trey Flowers. You know, there are some, myself included, that wondered if they would put the tag on Trey Flowers, but it's an interesting edge rusher class, like we were talking about with Lawrence. If Lawrence is edge rusher one, and we anticipate him going back to Dallas, Flowers might be edge rusher two.
Right.
You know, we've talked
more
about him on the show.
Right.
Versatility. You can slide him around. You can play him inside. You can play him off the guards, off the tackles, on the end, over the center, as the Patriots have done. And so he'll get a big offer coming his way. The Patriots won't tag him for the 17.3 that I think he'd command in terms of franchise tag number. And they'll slide in Derek Rivers. They'll slide in Dietrich Wise. They've got John Simon. They've got Adrian Claiborne. They'll draft a guy in the third round, and they'll just say, all right, we'll see you in August.
Mark, what was your impression last time we saw him? Obviously, he might not be the same player. Of Colin Kaepernick. I mean, just as a player, I will be honest and thought early on, I thought he's a little overrated and, you know, too much of a runaround guy. And when teams didn't immediately jump on him, people listening would remember me saying, well, you know, he's doesn't fit every system and all that. And then I quickly changed my tune. I went back and I watched some of his last tape with the Niners, with a terrible supporting cast. And it seems like ancient history, but I have no doubt in my mind that that player, if he's still the same player, is one of the top 25 quarterbacks on the planet still.
I'm right there with you.
All right.
You know, I did the same thing. I went back and I looked at some of his stuff in San Francisco, and like you said, no help whatsoever.
No.
And people, you know, they have this image of him with sort of the runaround right end, you know, against Green Bay and then flexing in the end zone. And they think, look, he's a guy that has to be outside the pocket and create with his legs. He was more of a pocket, a traditional type pocket passer that last year in
Absolutely.
San Francisco, with the bulk of his throws coming from the pocket. Look, I think if you're, you know, when the settlement was reached, his lawyer said there were two organizations that he thought where he, you know, could sign with, you know, and play for. And you mentioned New England. I think from a schematic fit, that might not be the best fit for him because, you know, you see where I'm going with this for a second. And he mentioned Carolina. And I think the Carolina one is a situation that makes a ton of sense because they're a vertical-based offense. Obviously, you've got Norv Turner, but they also do some things with their quarterback and Cam Newton that tailor to his athleticism. And I think that's an ideal situation for Colin Kaepernick because obviously if he still has the arm that we saw last on tape, he could fit a vertical passing game. They can do some things to help, you know, incorporate his athleticism in. And if you don't know what you're going to get from Cam Newton, if he's on this bench injured to start the season, that's not a bad plan B.
Oh, I've been saying this for a while. They have to bring somebody in. I don't know that Newton – this feels like Andrew Luck to me. Like,
doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, he may not even play this year. Like, and I'm totally speculating. It's just my feel. Like, they better get Blake Bortles or somebody better. I keep saying that's going to be Bortles' landing spot. Run him into a wall for a while till Cam gets back.
Yeah,
Kaepernick would be great.
I think Kaepernick would be great. And if you were forced to choose between Bortles and Kaepernick.
Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Bortles isn't one of the top 25 quarterbacks.
No, again,
we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to switch this to the draft. The combine's right around the corner. Be back here in a moment. All right. We had teased last week and just didn't get to it about Mark's take on Haskins. And we talked about it a little bit surrounding the Giants early in the show. Can you give me basically your scouting report on Haskins? And before you do, I think that some are going to look at him. We just talked about Cam Newton. He's not Cam Newton. I mean, like, no. He's very different. Don't generalize him. I mean, he's
You're not getting the Stephen A. Smith scouting report on Dwayne Haskins.
Right.
You know,
right.
Listeners, let's put it that way. Dwayne Haskins is more of a battleship. He's more of your traditional pocket passer, a guy that's not going to break and escape the pocket out the back door and create with his legs. He's going to need to learn from the Tom Brady's of the world on how to move and slide and create space with his feet in the pocket, because he's not a guy that's going to outrun you. But that being said, from a mental process standpoint, he might be one of my favorite quarterbacks in this class, because even though he only had the season as a starter, you see him doing the things that quarterbacks need to do pre-snap, adjusting the coverage, pointing out the mic, bringing in the tight end to help in protection, those little things. And it's not a situation where he's looking at the sideline and they're holding up the dumb cue card and stuff like that. He's doing it on his own. And so you see the mental process and standpoint, and you see it post-snap as well, where he's moving defenders, whether that underneath linebacker in a cover one, that whole linebacker with his eyes, or the free safety in the middle of the field. He's doing the things like that. So he's got a very good understanding of the mental aspects of playing the position. Where he lacks for me
Stop you real quick on the good part here. And my hunch is you agree with me, but like Trubisky – We haven't seen a lot of college football out of him, but unlike Trubisky, he seems much further along with that amount mentally, like you're saying.
Oh, yes, yeah, like right. Light years. Like, there were some moments where Trubisky was at UNC where it was a simple stick concept, and if the post-snap didn't match up with the pre-snap, he had vapor lock. I mean, I remember a throw against Virginia where he had stick concept to the left, and the number three, the inside receiver, is uncovered pre-snap. The slot corner is over the number two guy. He gets the ball on the shotgun snap. That slot corner jumps number three, and he just doesn't know what to do. And it's like, throw to number two. He's wide open. Like, you know, do that. But that froze Trubisky. Stuff like that doesn't freeze Haskins. So I do think he's advanced as where Trubisky was, a guy that went number two in a pretty good quarterback draft. You know, now with Haskins, though, where I find him lacking sometimes is the execution. It's like everything is great up until he releases the ball, you know, and then he just misses a throw. Like, I remember a throw against Purdue where they had sort of a smash type it was actually a Yankee concept variation where instead of the deep post and the dig route underneath it, that deep post converts on the fly to a corner route. It's a Kyle Shanahan style play. And he looks off the corner. He looks off the safety. Everything is great. He reads it so well pre-snap and then just misses the throw badly. If he could just put together some of those moments and hit on some of these throws, he'd be surefire, I think, the safest and, you know, QB1 in this class. So I want to see some better execution from him, but I love him from a mental standpoint.
I haven't nearly watched him as much as you did, but, you know, Ohio State was on a lot here on Saturdays and whatnot. And I don't want to compare him to Newton, but I did see a little bit of the lower body didn't always marry the upper body, you know, from the tip of your toes all the way to the tip of your finger. And accuracy suffered.
Yeah, that's true. There is that aspect to him. And it is a concern, because if you see him missing on some of these throws, you know, I've always said that, look, mechanics, they aren't a problem until they're a problem. And like, look at Patrick Mahomes. And this is when I started saying that. Like, his mechanics, people were saying, oh, that's never going to work. And I'm like, well, if you watch him, he's putting the ball where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't care what it looks like, as long as the ball gets to where it should be, when it should be. But when it starts to impact the results of the production, like with Blake Bortles, with that loop to his throw in motion, then it becomes a problem. And when you see Haskins miss on some of these wide open opportunities downfield, you start to wonder if it's more of a mechanical issue than anything else.
You just wrote an article. Where did you publish this article, by the way?
I put this up over at InsideThePylon.com, one of the places I do work. People can check it out.
Very cool. And the nature of the article, from what I understand, is all the quarterbacks that are going to Indy, you picked an area where it's most important for them, you know, whether it's interviews, 40-yard dash, whatever it is, some of the different things, medical, different things that go on at the combine. I mentioned this to the audience. I'm leaving here Tuesday late morning, driving 6 hours to Indy. There won't be a show next Tuesday. I'm going to do a dinner with the Steelers, and then I'll be broadcasting all week there, drive back home Saturday. So I'm excited to go. And let's start with Haskins then. I mean, what's the spot that he needs to, you know, really shine in Indianapolis next week?
You know, it's kind of the stuff we were just talking about. I want to see how he looks and throws 20 yards downfield or more.
Okay.
You know, because you know, on those shorter and intermediate throws, the ball placement seems pretty good. I want to see if there's a way to sort of expand the playbook with him. And I want to see if, look, what we're seeing is a mechanical issue or a pressure issue or what is it on these opportunities that he's missed throws downfield. And so, look, we all get it. The underwear Olympics, it's thrown in controlled situations in shorts and a T-shirt. Yeah, with some receivers you haven't thrown with before, but – you know, it's a nice little training wheels type of situation for these guys. So you expect them to hit it on these throws. If Haskins still struggles downfield, my concerns won't be eased, shall we say.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Is it safe enough to say that Kyler Murray, it's the way in? You know, what do you look at?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you could put – I wrote this. You could put his way in on pay-per-view, charge $49.99, and the rest of the football media world that doesn't make it to Indy will buy it and watch it. That it might be the biggest event of the entire combine. You might say, you know, the corners running the 40 or, you know, some of these freak, you know, athletes doing the broad jump. Now, it's Kyler Murray when he steps on the scale and weighs in.
What's a win for him? 5-1-0-0?
I think he hits 5'10", people are going to feel a lot better than 5'9". And it sounds so silly when you think right. Like 5'10" versus 5'097" is going to be a big deal. But even that eighth of an inch might make some general managers. And look, we saw Lewis Riddick on ESPN this week basically saying general managers, they look to check these boxes. And if you draft him and miss, you know, you're going to get that, you know, call over the intercom. Hey, the owner would like to see you. You know, why'd you do this? And so that's why even if he gets to 5'10", you can still say, yes, sir, ma'am, it was an outlier, but it's the Russell Wilson outlier and not the Doug Flutie outlier.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, it's an eighth of an inch, but yeah. It's a big deal.
It's a mental hurdle. It's like when you buy something and, you know, when you get gas and it's that, you know, 99.
Right.
It goes, oh, you know, it's only $3.99. It's not $4.02. It doesn't have that extra number.
Right. Do you think 190 is a win for him weight-wise?
I'd like to see more 195. I think the closer to 200, the better. And I think he's going to get there. I think we've seen him recently. It looks like he's putting on some weight. So, you know,
maybe don't run the 40 or do agility drills till you lose a little bit or, you know.
Yeah.
Manipulate the system a little bit.
Yeah. You know, game the system like they all do.
How about Daniel Jones?
Similar to Haskins, I want to see ball placement from him. And with Jones, I have him sort of, you know, pigeonholed as a West Coast type guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you see him on RPOs, you see him on more West Coast concepts, and I love the ball placement there. But the ball placement, as you get deeper and deeper down the field, suffers a bit. The ball placement suffered a bit down in Mobile. So I want to see him have some consistency when he's throwing the football to all levels, because otherwise I'm going to just have him as, look, he's a schematically limited quarterback to a West Coast type RPO type system. And yeah, there are places where that might work. You might say, you know, the Raiders and how Gruden is Mr. West Coast. You could look at Philly and say, look, that's kind of what they're running right now and some other types of offenses. But if you're going to talk about, you know, a quarterback that might get drafted in the first round, I don't need to see a guy that's going to be so limited schematically. So that's what I'm going to be watching when he throws the ball placement to all levels of the field.
Mark, I want people to check out your article at Inside the Pylon, but give me one or two others that stand out that maybe aren't as big in names.
You know, let's talk about Brett Rippon, who's a quarterback that Hill I'm going to die on. You know, I really like this kid. I sort of tiered and ranked these quarterbacks in this article that I wrote. He was at the top of that second tier, the guys that I think might be year two starter types. And he's basically in that like QB4, QB5 slot. And with me, I think it's going to be the meeting rooms, because we also have sort of taken the Parcells rules and thrown them out the window because nobody stays in school long enough to check those boxes.
Right.
But there are still some teams that believe in them. New England, for example, and he checks all seven of those rules. And so 4-year starter, a guy that has that mental standpoint similar to Haskins, where he's doing all that stuff pre-snap. So I think he could sit down, do whiteboard work and all that stuff with these teams and say, look, if you want to draft a Drew Locke or a Daniel Jones at 32, okay. I might still be in the board at 156, at 56, at 207, and you're getting somebody that is just as good, is well advanced in terms of the mental standpoint. And so I think Brett Rippon, that's an interesting one. And another quarterback that I think, Tyree Jackson. He is the upside project of this group, you know, raw, talented, has the absolute hammer of an arm. I want to see his left leg, because like many tall quarterbacks, He overstrides. It leads to locking up and straightening that left leg when he throws. It leads to a dip in velocity. It leads to some ball placement issues. If he cleans that up, you might have the lottery ticket in this entire group in Tyree Jackson.
Well, good stuff. Everyone needs to check that out. Everyone needs to follow Mark on Twitter. I'm not sure if we'll be back next week or not next Wednesday because I'll be at the Combine. Figure all that stuff out. I'm going to cut this short and head to the hospital with my daughter. I'm hoping to have Sando on tomorrow, see if that all works out. He just put out an article about Antonio Brown landing spots, and I'll probably talk Odell with him as well if we are able to get together. So that is a wrap. Leave us a little something on iTunes while you're at it. Over and out.